It is our great pleasure and privilege to continue the study of the book of Genesis today. In our last lesson, we were in the 17th chapter of Genesis, and we had gotten down to the 17th verse of that chapter. But today I'd like to begin and read from verse 15 through 22 of the 17th chapter of Genesis. So beginning with verse 15 of Genesis 17, "And God said unto Abraham, As for Sarah thy wife, thou shalt not call her name Sarah, but Sarah shall her name be. And I will bless her, and give thee a son also of her. Yea, I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall be of her. Then Abraham fell upon his face, and laughed, and said in his heart, Shall a child be born unto him that is 100 years old? And shall Sarah that is 90 years old bear? And Abraham said unto God, Oh, that Ishmael might live before thee. And God said, Sarah thy wife shall bear thee a son indeed, and thou shalt call his name Isaac, and I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and his seed after him. And as for Ishmael, I have heard thee. Behold, I have blessed him, and will make him fruitful, and will multiply him exceedingly. 12 princes shall he beget, and I will make him a great nation. But my covenant will I establish with Isaac, which Sarah shall bear unto thee at this set time in the next year. And he left off talking with him, and God went up from Abraham." In our last lesson, we discussed the fact that Sarah had her name changed. Verse 16 here, though, he turns the blessing to Sarah, said, "I will bless her and give thee a son also of her. Yea, I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall be of her." Twice, God said, "I will bless her." She had been barren all her life and was now 90 years old. So it would take a very special blessing for her to have a son at this time. When God said she would be a mother of nations, he apparently meant Judah, Israel, and Edom. Well, verse 17 says, that's where our lesson begins today, "Then Abraham fell upon his face and laughed and said in his heart, Shall a child be born unto him that is 100 years old? And shall Sarah that is 90 years old bear?" Here we see that Abraham first of all showed great humility. He fell on his face, the Bible says. The more favors and honors God bestows upon us, the lower we should be in our own eyes, and the more reverent and submissive toward God. Abraham also showed great joy. He laughed. It was a laughter of delight, not a laughter of doubt or disbelief. For God gave him no rebuke, as he later did when Sarah laughed in Genesis 18:13. But even the promises of God are a joy to God's people, as well as his performances. There is the joy of faith as well as the joy after the faith had been fulfilled. John 8:56, "Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it and was glad." These are the words of Jesus. Abraham had joy at the promise, for as he saw heaven in the promise of Canaan, he saw Christ in the promise of Isaac. Abraham also showed great admiration. He says, "Shall a child be born to him that is 100 years old? Verse 17. He does not speak of this as being doubtful, for he staggered not at the promise, Romans 4:20. Abraham regards this promise of a son as something very wonderful, and as something which could be brought about by the almighty power of God. He recognized this as something very kind, which drew him closer to God, and as something which was rather surprising. In Psalms 126, 1 through 3, "When the Lord turned again the captivity of Zion, we were like them that dream. Then was our mouth filled with laughter, and our tongue was singing. Then said they among the heathen, The Lord has done great things for them. The Lord has done great things for us, whereof we are glad." So verse 18 of our chapter today says, "And Abraham said unto God, Oh, that Ishmael might live before thee." Here Abraham prays for Ishmael. Not that Ishmael might be preferred before the son that Sarah should bear, but begging that Ishmael not be abandoned and forsaken by God. Even though God is talking with him about the promised son, still Abraham takes this opportunity to put in a good word for Ishmael. Here we have another example of seeing that God does allow us to make our requests known to him. In Philippians 4 verse 6, the NIV version says, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God." Whatever causes us to care and have fear should be taken to God in prayer. And of course, parents should pray for all their children. As Job offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all, this he did continually, Job 1:5, so Abraham, when promised a son by Sarah, which he greatly desired, let it be known that his son by Hagar was not forgotten. Abraham still has a care and a love and concern for Ishmael. The prospect of future blessings should not make us forget our former blessings. And the greatest thing we can desire for our children is that they may live before God. That is, that they may live the kind of lives which are pleasing to God. Spiritual blessings are the best blessings. And those are the blessings we should most desire for our children. They will live well if they live with God. God answers Abraham's prayer for Ishmael in verse 20 by saying, "And as for Ishmael, I have heard thee. Behold, I have blessed him, and will make him fruitful, and will multiply him exceedingly. 12 princes shall he beget, and I will make him a great nation." God says, "I have heard thee regarding your request for Ishmael. Behold, I have blessed him." That is, I have blessings in store for him. His posterity shall be numerous. I will multiply him exceedingly. 12 princes shall he beget. These 12 princes are later listed in the generation of Ishmael in Genesis 25, verses 12 through 16. We read here of great temporal blessings, but the church was not brought out of his loins, and the covenant was not placed in his family. The blessings of the covenant are reserved for Isaac and are given to him. Verse 19, "And God said, Sarah thy wife shall bear thee a son indeed, and thou shalt call his name Isaac. And I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and with his seed after him." Verse 21 says, "But my covenant will I establish with Isaac, which Sarah shall bear unto thee at this set time in the next year." God here plainly shows that Ishmael was not to have the covenant made with him, and the promised seed was not to come from Ishmael. God preached the promise of a son by Sarah. "Sarah thy wife shall bear thee a son indeed." Even true believers need to have God's promises repeatedly given to them that they may have strong consolation. We tend to forget. Our memories may wane, but God's promises are there, unchanged, every time we read them. God names the promised son Isaac, the word means laughter, because Abraham rejoiced when the promise was given. If God's promises be our joy, then the fulfillment of those promises will bring exceeding joy. God clearly states the covenant was to be established with Isaac. In Romans 9:6-8, "For they are not all Israel which are of Israel, neither, because they are the seed of Abraham, are they all children, but in Isaac shall thy seed be called, that is, they which are the children of the flesh, these are not the children of God, but the children of the promise are counted for the seed." At this point, the covenant was settled between God and Abraham. Verse 22 says, "And he left off talking with him, and God went up from Abraham." Presumably, when God went up, he went back to heaven. Our communion with God here may be broken and interrupted, but in heaven it will be a continual and everlasting feast. Now, verses 23 through 27, "And Abraham took Ishmael his son, and all that were born in his house, and all that were bought with his money, every male among the men of Abraham's house, and circumcised the flesh of their foreskin in the selfsame day, as God had said unto him. And Abraham was 90 years old and 9 when he was circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin. And Ishmael his son was 13 years old when he was circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin. And the selfsame day was Abraham circumcised, and Ishmael his son, and all the men of his house, born in the house, and bought with money of the strangers, were circumcised with him." These verses tell of how Abraham obeyed the law of circumcision. He himself and all his family were circumcised. They received the token of the covenant and thus distinguished themselves from all other families which did not have that rite of circumcision given. It was complete obedience. Abraham did not question it. God's will was God's law to Abraham. He did it because God told him to do it. This is reason enough. It was speedily obedience. In the selfsame day, it says, while the command is still sounding in our ears and the sense of duty is fresh, it's good to apply ourselves to it immediately, lest we put it off to a more convenient season and deceive ourselves. It was a universal obedience. He did not circumcise his family and excuse himself. He set the example, nor did he take privilege of the seal of the covenant to himself only, but wanted all to share it with him. And this included Ishmael. This circumcising of all the family may have left them incapacitated for a while and could have been dangerous in that day, but Abraham's obedience did not falter because of this. Abraham did this, though there might have been many reasons to hesitate or not do it. Circumcision was painful. To grown men, it was shameful. While they were healing and unfit for action, their enemies might take action against them, as Simeon and Levi did against the Shechemites. And Abraham had been justified and accepted by God for a long time now. Surely he did not have to do this. Abraham was 99 years old, so maybe he could be excused because of his age. This was a very strong thing to do religiously. The Perizzite and the Canaanite, which dwelt in the land, might mock and ridicule him for doing such a thing. Yet God's command was to do it, and this overruled all these objections, and 1,000 more. God's command to do outweighs all other arguments not to do. What God requires, we must do, not conferring with flesh and blood. However, we must be able to clearly show from God's word that He does command it. Theories and ideas coming from the mind of man must not be taken for a command from God. So that concludes chapter 17, but now I'd like to move into chapter 18.